belongs to those who write it, but shapes the identity of all the ones who read it. Reclaiming the real version of Rwanda's past through the production of films and documentaries has been the quest of Eric Kabera since 1994.
You are listening to Catharsis,
a podcast and photography project that explores the role of arts in transitions.
Today, we are in Rwanda, a dynamic country that decided to look openly at its past to shape a new nation. Eric Kabera is a renowned filmmaker, the founder of a major film festival in Rwanda, as well as a film institute. Let's talk about his own story.
So I was born and raised in Goma and Congo, under the amazing leadership of President Mobutu. Kleptocracy and demagogy and propaganda and chaos and beauty and love and poverty and wealth, so all combined, all the extremes. So I'm a bit of that product. So I did child education and psychology. I also did law, which I dropped out right after 94. And when I spoke some English, then I was picked up. You know, a lawyer friend of mine introduced me to some journalists, you know. And then I went from one journalist to another, you know, from France 2 to RFI to, I mean, I did almost all the media outlets that came to Rwanda and in the region after 1994 to cover the aftermath, because the genocide took place in 100 days. But within 100 days, the Western media were not deployed into Rwanda. So the media was caught, the international media was caught off guard. So by the time they realized that it was a bigger story at the with a huge magnitude, they came. The biggest drama was like the refugees crossing into the Congo, because we're talking about 2 million on the road. And that became the focus. And for me, knowing that there are so many people who were killed in Rwanda, including my relatives, that outraged me. So that gave me actually the appetite to get involved in exposing, you know, the local story, the story from the eyes of the survivors, and the pain and the need for the local sort of leadership and community to be assisted. Because all the money, you know, from Operation Turquoise to the Japanese, to the Germans, to the Americans, they all came into Congo, giving all the aid. And at the end of the day, all the aid ended up actually in the hands of the people who committed the genocide.
Would you say that this is a form of anger that drove you into...
Yeah, there was anger, there was frustration and limitation. So when I did it, I started it off as a gig or as a career, but it evolved into a fully fledged sort of pioneering or activism. And all journalists who came by, they all recommended me because they could see my passions and my adrenaline and my involvement. I became a very, very famous fixer at the early stage. And that's how I got connected to BBC and Channel 4, and I connected with Nick Hughes. We came up with an idea of producing a film together, 100 Days. I've never made a film before, and the Rwandan story or history is just so powerful.
Today, how would you describe your quest behind this?
I think, it never changed, really. It's still the same quest of telling the story from the perspective of the story owner, if you like. So I wanted to be empowered to tell my own stories according to my own eyes, the way how I see it, rather than the usual interpretations of people coming from different parts of the world and telling the story from them. That's it. And the creation of the school was that, so that we can create many other voices.
What are the biggest challenges you've faced along the past up until now to get your voice heard?
I mean, like, locally when I started off, I was misunderstood because, you know, those are the kind of things that, you know, no local had the prerogative to do. It's like, you know, telling a story, making a movie, those are things for the white people. Why are you doing it? And for me, that was a big challenge and big trouble. But he has improved. He's improved because I don't have to say much. Because like the young filmmakers who have come through our school have become like the real ambassadors of our quest. Things have gotten slightly easier. On the other hand, they're still very, very difficult and very challenging on the financial aspect of things.
And you were saying you were misunderstood?
Yeah, Western people, like the Western colleagues or people in the same field who saw me like stepping on the plate, they did not necessarily welcome it. They saw that, like, you know, the local guy who knows a little bit too much. And I will actually have experiences where people will sort of avoid me. Because if somebody comes with like a stereotypical cliche kind of sort of narrative, I'll look at him in the eyes without saying much, he'll know exactly what the hell are you talking about.
Did you think they saw you as a threat
in the
professional industry?
They saw me as a threat to decipher the motives around their trade. Or, you know, the stereotypical aspect of things. I mean, the good example is like when Hotel Rwanda was being made. I could see literally like the genre they wanted to explore and the market they were targeting. And I could see literally like this is something that will not work with the Rwanda narrative. Because the Rwanda narrative is not like, you know, me sitting here with you and telling you like, hey, look how great I am. I've saved everybody. I've trained more than 500 students. I pioneered film industry. If I say that, I mean, I'll be like cremated within the culture aspect of our society. It's like, you know.
How do you feel about the need for diversity in the stories told about Rwanda?
I think it's evolving because Rwanda is still rings at the name as the name of the synonymous of tragedy, pain, genocide, and suffering. But only until you come, when you come, then you go, hey, you know, there's a cafe that looks like something that is in France and Portugal, in Spain, or in New York. Or there's a road that is paved. Or there are people who speak like you and I, or who have the same aspirations. Is dramatically changing the narrative. Because in the old days, the narrative has always been like, hey, these are the people who are uncivilized and they need to stay like that. At least, you know, President Kagame has changed that kind of narrative and has made us all rebels.
And what are your main sources of inspiration?
I think it's Rwanda. Rwanda inspires me a lot. Like the landscape, the people, the resilience, the shift, like, you know, from poorly stricken community to a community that is aspiring to have like all the little things that we've seen, from infrastructure, hospital, hotels, cafes, paved roads. I mean, 25 years ago, never had this. So that gives me a lot of humility, especially when you travel and you see how people take things for granted. I try as much as possible, maybe, to use the platform or the small avenue I have to use the medium, like the festival, the school. So I create that kind of sort of like a world perspective, you know, from the students I interact with, from the people I interact with, like yourself, so that I understand it, you know, which background you come from, why you're doing this. So. I mean, it's a quest, but I think being in that position is a privilege. It's hard, you know. I'm not a screenwriter, but I write, but I would not call myself a screenwriter.
The fact that the diaspora, Rwandan diaspora abroad is wide and spread and willing to come back, how do you think it influences the storytelling of the country?
I think the diaspora is interested in positive images of the continent. Yeah, they want to see the continent that is evolving, that is peaceful, that is clean. So a lot of diaspora people have created a need, or not created, but felt a need to connect with the positive Africa. And Rwanda has set itself to be that example. And those are the kind of images that we want to share with them or to spread across, because all the images out of Africa and out of this part of the world have been very cliche and very stereotypical and very poor. Poor Africa, poor this, need help, da 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 da.
Do you feel like there is a good balance today between the stories about the genocide and the new stories about Rwanda?
Yeah, it is evolving quite a lot. It's evolving quite a lot. Especially through the young filmmakers who want to prove themselves. They can tell other stories rather than the genocide. But even though, you know, the genocide is still always the bad job of many of the stories. Yeah.
And it's not an easy question. How would you dream Rwanda in 25 years?
I think peace. I mean, peaceful. I want it to be peaceful. I want that transformation and that transition to continue so that we can aspire to the same privileges you guys have. Peace, understanding, and social cohesion, and to living in a place where you're not threatened. You know? I think that's like, you know, basic human aspiration. And then the rest come, where you can walk freely and be in a place that is not fully polluted, be in a place where the breeze is nice, you can hike the mountains, you can have access to education and healthcare, and you can travel to other places and you can talk to people. That's the biggest wealth that I wish for.